kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Gabe is locked up on punishment in the bathroom, but Raven is sitting on my desk, so who knows what the fuck he's going to do, because we haven't had him that long, and I don't know how he's going to behave during a podcast. I hope
guess
he
we'll
does.
Find out.
Like, at this point in his life, he's just happy to not be getting kicked around on a porch, so he's pretty agreeable. But he was being mouthy, that's why he's out and Gabe's not. They get along, it's just that they talk too damn much when they're together. Mm. They're just like, meow, 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 back and forth to each other. And I'm just like, shh.
Hush your fuss.
Yeah. You fucking loudmouth cats. I don't know how to handle loudmouth cats.
And you want Predator.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
She won't be a loudmouth when I have her because she'll be too busy getting loved on.
It doesn't work like that.
Not at all. She doesn't like being loved on.
It's just a weird... Like, I'm just not used to it, is more than, it doesn't bother me. For the sake of the show, they need to be quiet. But it doesn't really bother me when they talk back and forth, rather than just this, like, why are you guys doing this? But it's interesting. I haven't had two cats together in maybe 10 years or so. We've always just had one cat at a time. And cats are like Pringles. You can't have just one.
You're right. Yeah. You're totally right. You're totally right. My mom has two now.
But it's like, that's how it's been for a long time. I've just had one. Are you just going to come over and step on my shit? Hi. That's exactly what he's doing. Oh, you have paper. Let me lay on this. Please don't knock my phone off. That's why it's broken. Gabe does that all the time.
Cats are like Pringles. That feels like a good place to start the show, huh?
Yeah.
So, what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe, joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you?
At this point, I feel like I should be offended with the lackluster joining as usual statement.
What do you want from me?
I feel like you should be more excited, Joe. I'm excited.
Fucking joining as usual.
Fuck yeah. Hi.
Oh, Predator, shut your fucking face. I swear to God, if you're going to meow this entire show, I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
Predator's going to come live with me. And at this Predator. Point, she just fit right in because my house is just full of black cats now. We're just a black cat sanctuary.
We got a lot of show to take care of, and we're going to kick things off with the news with our special BlizzCon correspondent,
blah, Chris, blah, blah, blah.
Chris Huber, joining the show. Chris, how's it going?
I hope you're ready.
Chris has an opinion.
I hope you're ready. That's all I can start off with. I hope you're ready.
Well, let's start off with how are you?
I'm okay. I'm. You know, there's a lot of stages of grief, and I think I'm finally past acceptance.
You're on acceptance now.
No, I think I'm just getting over acceptance.
What's after acceptance? I thought that was the end.
I don't remember.
I thought acceptance was the end.
Okay, well then I guess I'm over it.
I don't think you're over it though.
We'll see. We'll see. We can judge where I currently am in my position with Blizzard by how this podcast goes. I'm going to work it out. You guys.
We need a smooth-toned narrator to break in and say he was not. In fact, over it.
He was not, in fact, over it.
I've been thinking about this a lot. like I can't even, I cannot convey to you how much this has been on my mind since it happened. Like, any neutral thought that I've had throughout all of my days since BlizzCon has been about Diablo Immortal. like I've probably seen upwards to 3,000 memes about it.
Only?
Like individual subgroups.
Okay.
Specifically about different derivatives of a particular meme. I have seen so much. I have watched roughly, 12 to 20 hours of YouTube content.
Jesus Christ,
of analyzing everything that's happened since BlizzCon. Like,
well, for the people who don't know what happened at BlizzCon,
that was my line. I was going to say that because I have no fucking idea.
Oh, trust me, I will set you up perfect.
All right, give us the news, Chris. Let's go over the non-Diablo stuff first.
Okay, let me quick and just pull up like how, just so I don't miss anything. It started off fine. I just want to like, because there are like certain things to touch on the other Blizzard IPs, because there was significant news that was announced. And if you're not familiar with BlizzCon is essentially a giant convention that is strictly just for Blizzard IPs. Because there are, when you think of how many projects they have, it's a manageable amount of stuff that you could pack into an event to kind of give back to the community. And it's always been a strict, like, communal event. Like, this is supposed to be, you know, for the people that are fans of the games, that are, like, the diehard, like, be-all-end-all Blizzard fanboys, you know, and there's a lot of them, because a lot of their IPs are extremely important to how gaming as a whole got developed. Like, they've just been a massive company for so many years, and they've just put out incredible products. Like I don't think anybody could debate that whatsoever.
True.
But it was always about like their communities, because their communities really built a lot of their games, and they kept their franchises relevant for so long. Because when you really break it down, how Blizzard has been for as a company for so many years, like their content cycles, I guess you could say, they take a little bit longer than most other companies, especially for how big of a company they are. And ever since they got acquired by Activision, I think it's been a completely big shift, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But as a whole, when they started, like, they were diehard developers. And they knew, like, they were very in, like, they knew their communities well. Like, they really stuck together with them, and they knew them well because they were also them. It wasn't like it was a giant corporation. It was a core group of people that really cared about the games, right? So
they were with the fans because they were fans.
Exactly. I think
were.
Yes. I mean, with this big fiasco, I think it's going to be obvious to show that they're kind of just in it for the money right now. So let me pull up their event info and how it went. Sorry. I want to make sure I hit everything.
I honestly thought you were pulling that stuff up during your spiel.
No, I couldn't like do two things at once, 'cause I was just so fucking, yeah, sorry.
You were in the zone. I told you,
this is going to be bad, man. This is going to be it's going to be like an old episode. I'm going to end up going on for like fucking 3 hours. I'm sorry. Blizzard has been my favorite fucking company in gaming forever. I have been a diehard Blizzard fanboy my whole fucking life. Like, so this,
I'm just going to get my sketchbook and doodle some dicks while we're doing this.
Nice.
Perfectly acceptable, because you know what? I feel like that's all I've seen when it comes to like Blizzard announcements. I feel like I've just seen dicks dangling in front of my face. And it's like, fuck you, Chris.
Like I should have went to this convention. I missed out.
See, now here's the bigger thing, right? I was considering going to it. Like, I really wanted to do everything in my power to try and get there, because they were hyping up this BlizzCon so fucking much for Diablo. Like, they were hyping it to the nth degree. They have been pretty much silent to their fan base for pretty much for years, other than just porting D3 over to fucking consoles, right? So they've been silent for years, and then they come out of nowhere, and they're just like, hey, we've got a lot of shit going on. We got a lot of, quote unquote, we have a lot of projects with a lot of different teams working on a lot of projects. And, you know.
And, ooh boy, wait till you guys see what we have.
Yeah.
Well, while you're pulling that stuff up, should we go over some other news or?
Go ahead. Hit a couple other things. Let me pull some shit up quick.
All right, let's see. What are some of the big news bits this week? Two games were added to the Xbox backward compatibility lineup, with Tom Clancy's Hawks and Tom Clancy's End War both being added. So that's nifty.
Yeah. I remember. I think I have End War. Shit.
Mine's in the mail.
I liked it. I remember playing it.
I think I paid $1.99 for it.
No, for real?
Yeah. Off of eBay.
It was not popular because people were not expecting a strategy game like that. And that was exactly the kind of shit I was into at the time. I was playing Halo Wars really heavily. And I was like, fuck yeah, I want this. And I remember enjoying it.
Johnny Darkfang in the chat, but don't you guys have phones?
Yeah, I'll hit that. I'm gonna trust me. I've got ammo. I'm pulling it all up. So I will make sure that you guys are completely 100% up to speed with everything.
Before that, though, some other news. Nintendo of Europe has announced that Travis Strikes Again: No More Heroes is slated to release January 18th on the Switch. So I'm excited for that.
Okay.
YouTube finally launched on the Switch.
Wait.
Oh, yeah, that's actually pretty, that's sick.
Did the Switch not already have apps on it?
They have Hulu, and now YouTube.
No Netflix?
Nope.
And the whole point of this thing is that it's portable?
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll hit on
it. It doesn't even have a web browser.
There is a web browser, though. There's one on there.
But officially, they don't have one.
Right, because when I was down in Florida, and I had to connect over to the hotel Wi-Fi, I had to log into their like browser with my room key and stuff, and there was one that pulled up on the Switch. So
yeah, but you can't like access it for personal use.
Access it, yeah,
yeah.
But it's there in the like somewhere.
Like, yeah,
wow,
they've got it. Like,
but hey, they have YouTube now finally. So that's good.
I mean, they're moving up in the world. But when you start on zero, you don't really have far to go.
This means, Chris, you could rewatch the BlizzCon conference on your Switch.
You know.
Oh boy.
Listen, I've relived it like 100 times. Like, I have scrutinized every little bit of this BlizzCon to the nth degree. Like, you do realize, like, how, like, again, Cole, like, I'm glad I didn't. I was going to get my whole right arm to be a Diablo sleeve.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, I had planned that since I was in high school.
Like, yikes.
Yeah. Like, I'm so glad. So glad. I did not do that.
I just love how we're going to keep coming back to Diablo as we go over all the other news.
Hit everything else. I'm going to try and focus in on pulling up a bunch of shit. Like,
Red Dead Redemption in like the first week has already sold over 17 million copies.
That was more than Red Dead Redemption 1. It sold in 8 years.
Yeah, lifetime sales.
That's pretty fucking crazy. I knew a thing. I had a fact. I was ready for news.
Look at you.
It was almost like we're good at this. Almost.
No, we're not. We're not. After a tweet from Xbox about the upcoming XO18 event going on this weekend, there was a winky emoji reply from none other than Humble Bundle, fueling speculation that we might finally see an Xbox bundle announced this weekend.
Ooh. There was also, there's more Game Pass games that are supposed to be announced. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'm sure we'll have a lot of XO18 news on next week's show.
XO18 is going to get some love.
Yeah. Maybe we'll even do something over the weekend to have a timely release on Wednesday instead of next Saturday.
Us doing something timely. What is this?
Hey, believe it or not, it happens sometimes. What do you think, though? Would you be happy to see an Xbox Humble Bundle?
I mean, Humble Bundle is basically where you, like, you get a shit ton of games for really cheap, right? And then you can, like, donate or whatever to get to pay more for it.
Yeah, they...
I'm kind of surprised that this has not been a thing that Xbox has done anyway.
Yeah, there have been a couple on PlayStation, a couple on Nintendo. It's about time we finally see one on Xbox if this happens.
I feel like if they're going to market it, too, and they've waited so long, it better be fucking good.
Pool Nation FX.
I mean, I liked Pool Nation FX, but I don't want it again. Like, at this point, it has to be some really good shit that we have not had for Games with Gold already.
I have this bad feeling that they're going to announce this bundle, and I'm going to have already owned everything in it.
I wouldn't put
basically,
it past
basically, yeah.
let's be honest. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of inevitable, though, given especially how you, like, buy collector's edition of everything.
I've been cutting back. The only big collector's edition with the...
instead of 500, so...
Well, no, like, this holiday season, the only big collector edition that I bought with an actual statue and all that other stuff was Assassin's Creed. That's it.
Is there a collector's edition of Spyro?
No.
Fuck! Well, I mean, that may be for the better.
I think if you pre-order it at GameStop, you get a keychain.
I could just make my own damn keychain.
Well, then there you go.
Didn't you see that since we didn't record the show on Thursday, that's what I spent my whole night doing, is making keychains. I have a whole stack of them that have to go. I didn't even mean to. I was just like, I'm going to make these and see what people think. And then it was like, shit, now I have a whole stack of keychains over here on my desk that D has to go mail out after we're done.
I'm actually kind of happy we didn't record it last night because I got to bond with my dad over text message with the Steelers game.
Bonding.
Yeah. Steelers game was so good. It was an absolute domination against the Panthers.
If we had recorded on Thursday night, we were going to speed run anyway. And then we would have missed out on Chris's ranting about Diablo. And it would have just been awful.
I'm happy this worked.
It really panned out for the better, guys.
It did. And it will. In a few moments. I have just a couple of more news bits to go through. PUBG is going to PS4 in December.
I'm not surprised. And it needs to.
The big question, though, is with Fortnite and Call of Duty's blackout, will anybody care anymore?
Probably not.
Yeah, probably
not. But that's not the only PUBG news.
And I've played a decent amount of Call of Duty, and I would say that it's polished enough to the point that it's significantly better than PUBG and will probably stay more popular just since it's been, like, so good.
I think it's a matter of preference. I like PUBG over Blackout. I do. I say it. I don't care. Fight me.
Well, I mean, I'm playing it on PC, though, and, like, the PC versions, like, they're drastically different. Like, it's just... it's still not well optimized on PC, and it's been out for how fucking long on PC?
Yeah.
17 years.
I don't know why. There's just I just prefer it over Blackout. I feel like Blackout is like Battle Royale Noob Edition. It's just so easy to play. Fight me.
I don't know.
Hey, like, when
it's really easy to play.
When I made it to fifth place on my third time playing it, you know it's an easy game.
I'm sure it's a different experience on console.
And you know the funny thing is, I say that even though I've never won a game, but I've also never played a solo game, and I've never won duos with Studa or my husband either. So, like, I'm at least consistent.
I'm gonna play. Actually, I had planned on playing a bunch of Blackout this weekend because of they're doing like a double.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's like a double XP or double whatever kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I just find that the whole aspect of like, oh, you can heal on the go and you don't even have to stop. And it's just, I don't know. There's certain aspects of it I find that it's just easier. And I find the overall experience easier to get into and play, which is fine. It should be. It's Call of Duty. And Call of Duty's kind of whole thing is like, pick it up and play it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not saying it. I don't say it as a negative. It's just
I think just the pacing being like significantly quicker is.
I think is
a good thing when you're playing it on PC. Just in my opinion, just because like it, I'm used to older FPSs, so like Quake and CS and stuff like that. So having a quicker experience is more enjoyable to me when I'm sitting down and playing, because I don't want to sit like. I don't want to spend like 40 minutes in a PUBG game when I could spend like 20 in a Blackout.
No.
I don't mind the slower pace of PUBG. I think I well, obviously I prefer it, but
yeah. I've never played PUBG.
It's a funny thing because one of the reasons I like Call of Duty over Battlefield is I like the faster multiplayer matches. But when it comes to Battle Royale, I'm a slower player, and I prefer that more nuanced, thoughtful pace. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just an interesting...
Yeah, when I sit down to play, I tend to play relatively aggressively. So that's why I like the faster pace. I tend to gravitate towards that more. So it's all, yeah, it's all preference.
It's not that you're wrong.
It's just that I prefer the other one.
I am never wrong. Haven't you met me? My name is Eternal Motherfucking Right Rage.
Yeah. No, it's just an opinion.
Also, I can't defend myself against chat because I have a cat sleeping on my keyboard at the moment. But Ian can keep that fucking snow to himself. Fuck snow. We're supposed to get snow on Tuesday.
Yeah,
fuck
I don't want to think about it.
That's a four-letter word that I have no fucking interest in. It's pouring rain like piss out of a boot. I'm all jacked up on steroids just so I can function. I don't even want to think about it. It's going to be like, I think the high for tomorrow is supposed to be like 39 degrees, and I'm done. Fuck that shit. I'm ready for summer. Give me that back.
No, I don't want summer back. I hate summer. I'm fat. I don't like the heat.
I don't like the heat, but it's a lot easier to turn on an air conditioner than to warm up a 20-degree house. But to be fair, we're rednecks and we don't have an air, you know, like a furnace that you just turn up and be done with it. We have propane.
You got to chop the wood and haul it in.
We did have wood heat. We had wood heat for a really long time until I was diagnosed.
And my dad still has wood heat.
So. Yeah, I can't carry in firewood anymore, so we just don't do it.
Firewood.
When you have 30 acres of land, it's dumb not to use wood for heat because it's free. It's right there. It just grows everywhere.
Yeah. It's a good way to look at it.
But we don't anymore because I can't carry it.
You have children. Slave labor. Put them to work.
Now, yeah.
Isn't
now
that why you have kids?
That's the reason to have kids.
I would trust number one to maintain heat. But the worst part of wood stoves is like getting up at 2 a.m. and loading those bitches back down.
I used to do that when I was younger. I was still awake at those times playing Diablo.
Number one has to get up for school at 5 a.m. So
yeah, I used to just like I would stay up until about 1 and then I would sleep for like 3 hours and I'd go in for school.
But it used to be the worst to get up at, like, because I didn't get up till 6:30 for a while because the girls didn't have to get on the bus till 7:30. And then they pushed it back to 7:15 or whatever. But when they didn't have to get up as early, then you'd get up and the fire would have gone out because I'd trust D to get up in the middle of the night and he could sleep through a tornado in his ear. So, and then I'd wake up and, like, it would just be embers and they'd be half dead. And you're sitting there like raking everything back.
Trying to get it going again.
Fuck that.
Son of a bitch.
I don't have the energy for that shit anymore. I don't want to wake up at 5 a.m. and be cold. I'm already up at 5 a.m. and I don't even have the luxury of like, I don't like coffee. So I can't drink coffee to warm up. So I just
You don't like coffee like at all ever?
Uh-uh. It's me not bean blood. I hate coffee. I don't get it. I don't do coffee. It's I drink like a shit. Dr. Pepper.
So I guess the only reason why I like coffee is because it was the only way that I survived when I was on the road. And now when I go into the fucking shop.
Sorry, we're not all rock stars, Chris.
No, I wasn't a coffee guy, and then I think it was just a necessity. Like, I wasn't about to do energy drinks. Like, I did those in college, and it was terrible.
Yeah, I don't do energy drinks either. I'm just naturally bubbly, and it's fucking awful.
Cole, Ian asks if you drink tea.
I do not.
You don't drink sweet tea? You want sweet tea?
You want sweet tea? That is the one redneck side of me that I just could not do. I have, like, it's funny, too. I have, like, 4 gallons of tea in there in the cabinet, and none of us drink it. So it's just... It's just a thing. It's just there in case somebody else drinks it.
I like how we went from talking about PUBG going to PS4 to firewood and coffee.
Firewood and coffee and tea. Coffee's so awful. The funny thing, too, is my sister, like, my number one told my sister, she's like, oh, I like coffee. Because she does. She likes all the fucking frappes and mochiatos and stuff. And so my sister's like, oh, I bet you make your own. And she's like, no, mom and dad don't drink coffee. So we don't even have a coffee pot. My sister goes and buys my daughter a coffee pot and like mountains of different coffees to try. And now my house is like full of coffee shit. And I'm like, what is this?
What the hell? Coffee drinkers.
So, I don't understand.
So off the subject of coffee, Cole, what do you think of Xbox losing that exclusive with PUBG?
I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, we knew it was just going to be a console launch exclusive anyway. And they own the fucking company. So it's just going to be more money for Microsoft.
Right. Yeah, it would be stupid for them not to. So
yeah.
Wait, Microsoft like owns them? What?
Yeah, they bought it. Yeah, it was one of the companies that they announced. Bluehole.
Yeah, they bought Bluehole.
Mm-hmm. When? I don't remember that.
I was at like E3. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember Bluehole being one of them.
Yep, they were.
That is interesting. Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was them.
So yeah, it's like when they bought Mojang. It's just they own Minecraft and it's on everything. PUBG is going to be on everything.
Well, Minecraft was on everything before Microsoft bought Mojang, so they just kept it on everything. I really don't recall them buying Bluehole though. Mm-hmm.
Chris, back me up. Google it. I can't. There's a cat asleep on my keyboard.
Uno momento.
But, I sent you a picture of that too, Joe, so you can put that on screen if you want to. There's a cat on the keyboard.
But that's not the only exclusive that's leaving Xbox, is Path of Exile is also going to PS4 later on this year.
I have that and I haven't even touched it.
Chris, have you played Path of Exile?
Of course I have. I've been dipping back into it occasionally here and there. Obviously, because I don't want to play Diablo. I uninstalled Diablo, Joe.
Oh my god. You're really pissed.
I uninstalled Diablo 3.
You're going to reinstall it.
No, I'm not. Like,
eventually like, you will.
Listen, if I'm going to play a Diablo game, I'm just going to play Diablo 2. I kept Diablo 2 installed. I uninstalled Diablo 3.
Well, what did Diablo 3 do wrong that you installed that?
They haven't added any content to that game in like 4 years. They just keep porting it out.
That's because they were busy.
They moved it over to their classic games division.
Oh, God.
How old is the game?
We'll get there.
Okay.
All right. Final bit of news that I have unrelated to Diablo is Capcom announced Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Trilogy for a Japanese release in February for Switch, PS4, and Xbox One, as well as Steam in the spring. There's no word on a Western release yet, but it's cool to see Phoenix Wright hitting new platforms.
Yeah, I haven't got a chance to really like play one other than like one of the first or second. So I'd be down to check a new one out.
I have no idea what that is.
It's I don't know. It's like an attorney simulator.
You're a lawyer. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're a lawyer.
It's a simulator, and I haven't played it. What is this?
There's story to it. Like there's, I don't know.
Is it a point and click? Am I doing myself a disservice?
Sort of. I guess that game is kind of hard to describe. I'm trying to think of how I would actually like put it. I guess it's like sleuthy. Pseudo text adventure-y? Was that accurate?
Pretty much, yeah.
I guess I'm going to look that up after the show.
They're cool. They're fun. They've got some like cool quirky humor to them too.
Huh. All right, speaking of dicks,
Well, speaking of dicks, Spencer announced Microsoft is adding 5 game development studios to Microsoft family. Playground Games, Compulsion Games, Ninja Theory, they created the initiative. It doesn't say anything about Blue Hole.
I thought they announced something back in like, maybe it was like back in February.
Tencent owns 11% of Blue Hole.
Oh, no. It was, and Tencent's the one that own like League of Legends and like all them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, Tencent like owns I said,
a little bit of everything at this point. Like, you create a game company, and Tencent just comes in and lays their dick on it. And it's like, we own this now.
this is mine.
And everybody just goes, well,
I guess you're right. Okay. You're just throwing money at us. I guess you're right. Like,
yeah, it looks like there is no ownership of PUBG by Microsoft. They just published the PUBG on Xbox.
Okay. Well, I was wrong.
Suck it, bitches.
Dang it.
So, Chris, BlizzCon.
Okay, let's do the things leading up to.
What's
and
a BlizzCon?
I think, honestly, main thing is the way that everything was presented. Okay, let's go to that first. So, even just the hype up to BlizzCon. So, Diablo community hasn't really gotten anything for a handful of years, other than they added 2 different modifiers that is no different than what they would do for like maybe a seasonal event or like a weekend reward, something where it's like double goblins or double bounties. It hasn't been anything like significantly game changing, right? So they haven't done anything for the game for a handful of years. Out of nowhere, earlier this year, they go, hey, we saw like a bunch of content creators following their hiring process. They would look at their boards for who they were hiring for certain roles in development for certain projects before they were even announced. And people were seeing people being hired for a Diablo unannounced Diablo project for a handful of years. So we knew that there's been stuff in development for Diablo. They just haven't come out and said anything, right? Okay. So most people, when it comes to Diablo, it is a PC game. Mm-hmm. Like, it was always on PC first. And then the fact that they ported it over to, like, consoles and stuff like that, because it was even on the PlayStation, like, back at least the first day. One back mm-hmm. in the day. So it was primarily a PC-based game. So I understand that, like, well, all right, I'm getting ahead of myself. All right, so this BlizzCon... leading up to it, they made a post on their YouTube page, and their community manager comes out, which they've been silent for a handful of years, and they're just like, hey, we've got new stuff coming on multiple Diablo projects. Some of them are going to take longer than others, but we have something really big to show you later this year, referring to BlizzCon, okay? So even two weeks before BlizzCon, everybody's talking about like, oh, okay, well, you know, obviously Diablo 4 is way out into production. There's no way that we're really going to like see anything about that coming out anytime soon. If they're going to do some other kind of big Diablo project, then it's got to be like a D2 remaster, or it's going to be like an expansion for 3 or some more content for 3, since they're porting it over to other like consoles and stuff like that. I'm sure they're going to want to support that with extra content. So at least maybe a new character. Like, everybody's thinking maybe the Druid, since they did the Necromancer pack, right?
Mm-hmm.
So before I even get into how BlizzCon went, well, now let's go into BlizzCon went. So before they even get to Diablo, they start the entire production. And each game that they chose to do in their order was always to lead up to whatever their biggest announcement is. Like, that's just kind of how they've always done it. They even had a huge gap in the schedule for after the main, like, opening ceremonies for whatever the, like, next biggest thing is. And it was a Diablo what's next. So they're hyping up Diablo like, we're about to drop some crazy shit on you guys. They start the day off with, I think it was Heroes of the Storm. So Heroes of the Storm, what is their League of Legends-esque kind of MOBA, and they announced a new hero that's not, like, normally Heroes of the Storm is like kind of an amalgamation of all of Blizzard's IPs, so they just take characters from every single one of them and just kind of mash them all together, and here, you can play as whoever the fuck you want. They created a brand new character, like, just I guess they're kind of adding lore into the game to kind of, like, set her up as, like, who she is, but it's completely original, like, not from any of their other IPs. It was specific for Heroes of the Storm. They added a couple of skins, and then they had, like, a panel about, like, what's next for them. Then they tried going over to Hearthstone. Their mic didn't work. So, so then they cut... They cut over to Overwatch, I believe. Yeah, they cut over to Overwatch. They showed this really cool, like, nice cinematic for a new new character. I think they might have announced, like, some other stuff, like, later on, like, in their what's next for Overwatch. But it was mostly this new character. And I'm pretty sure, like, she was, like, playable, like, right after that. Then they go back over to Hearthstone because they fixed the mic problems. They announced their new expansion, 135 cards, a couple new, like, mechanics for the game, stuff like that. So then they go over to World of Warcraft, and they talk about, like, WoW Classic. I guess, like, WoW Classic is released for, slated for summer 2019.
And it's included with your subscription, right?
Right. So it's free to anyone that has a live subscription to the regular World of Warcraft game. They're doing a new charity pet. The proceeds are going to code.org. It's basically to encourage, I think it was minorities and women to get into computer programming, stuff like that.
That's cool.
That kind of stuff's cool. They showed a new cinematic for Lost Honor. They showed some stuff for the new patches, and all that kind of stuff. Then after that, they introduced this guy that is from Blizzard's Classic Games division. So they've already hit all of their other IPs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they introduced this guy. It's Classic Games division. We're like, I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, okay, so they're obviously going to talk about Diablo 2, right? Because it's the only thing that's left. They just put a cinematic up, right? Cinematic starts, and it shows a banner. It's just like this dark field, and it shows a banner. And the voice in the background is the same voice actor as the Dark Wanderer in Diablo 2. So I don't know if he was the guy that originally did this one for them for this game as well, but spoiler alert, not Diablo 2. it's Warcraft 3, which, cool. I know there's a lot of people that were like that really enjoyed Warcraft 3. I didn't play Warcraft 3, but I'm watching this trailer and I'm hearing the voice actor that did the Dark Wanderer in Diablo 2, and I'm like, fucking Diablo 2. And then I see the banner, and there's a Horde logo on the banner. I'm like, what the fuck?
No, I've Diablo been bamboozled.
Right. So now they go over all the Warcraft stuff. It's a complete remaster. So they're essentially doing the same thing that they did for StarCraft 1. So they're making it, like, compatible for newer systems, better graphics, better engine, all that kind of stuff. Like, they even, like, some of the cinematic that they used was rendered from the in-game stuff. So they're even doing, like, new cinematics. They're doing, like, all this other kind of stuff. It's essentially, like, from the ground up, remaking the original game, right?
Which is cool.
Which is awesome. Yeah. Like, I hope they continue to do that for their other IPs. Hint, hint.
Nothing pretty in much particular.
Pretty much what the entire community has been asking for since after Diablo 3. And then they get to Diablo. Wyatt Chang comes out, and everybody else, like, I don't know if anybody else kind of, like, picked this up, but when I was watching the presentation, right, I've seen him speak in front of crowds when he was, like, passionate about, like, doing Diablo 3 stuff, right? And I've seen him like on streams talking about Diablo stuff, and he's always been like super energetic, but like to the degree that he has like stuff to back it up. Like he has information, and he's always been like able to explain himself well, right? He comes out, and I swear, is like the first words out of his mouth were like, "We love Diablo," and it was just like really, I don't know, it came off so disingenuous, like so, like forced. Kind of arrogant almost, like we love to slay demons. Like, okay, so do I. Go on.
It's fun.
Okay. It's like our ever evolving world makes us want to be like closer together with our friends and families and more connected. I'm like, you motherfuckers, no. They obviously end up announcing Diablo Immortal, a mobile only Diablo game. They show a cinematic, which a cinematic was literally it. They put they put out a new cinematic for it. So they actually went through the effort of there had to be a lot of time put into that cinematic to actually render out some new stuff for this mobile game. They say that it is between the events of Diablo 2 and Diablo 3. So from a lore perspective, it's new content. It is all new, like the game itself looks like it's all just D3 assets ported over to a phone and dumbed down. So it's not like they're using new art or new like they made a couple new like renders, like Bale was in it. That was the only, they show this trailer, the only thing that was new in the entire trailer was a render of Bale, and that was it. It was like for 2 seconds at the tail end of the trailer. That was the only thing that I genuinely got excited for, because Bale was the primary boss in Diablo 2 Lords of Destruction. Sorry, I gotta take a sip of water.
I like Ian's comments in chat.
Sorry. So they show this Diablo game. It's between Diablo 2 and Diablo 3, and then it falls fucking flat. Like, no sympathy claps, no, like, there was, you know when somebody makes an announcement and somebody's just not that genuinely into it? Like, you're presenting this in front of the diehard Blizzard fanboys that are primarily a PC audience that hasn't gotten any content for their game for a handful of years. And you're going to tell them that all of the resources that you currently have to show us are being put into a mobile game. Not even a mobile game that they are developing themselves. They're actually outsourcing it to a company called NetEase. NetEase is a Chinese-based company that essentially has just kind of made spam MMOs to flood a mobile market to make like significant money off of microtransactions. They're not even building the, like, they say that they're building the game from the ground up, but they're not even building the game from the ground up. It is essentially Diablo 3 assets slapped on top of one of their NetEase already pre-existing games.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it just a reskin of something they already made? I like Ian in chat saying it would be like telling the PC gaming community that you have a new Half-Life game coming out, only to reveal that it's some dipshit mobile tower defense game.
Right, well, you see, but now here's the thing, okay? And I will preface this that it's not that I am 100% against a Diablo mobile game, okay? However, I don't want to play a primary Diablo experience on my mobile phone. Like, they do a partner app with WoW where you could, like, send out your garrisons and send them on, like, little missions and stuff like that. Like, it's a partner app that helps you in the primary game, right? Mm-hmm. If they did something like that with Diablo, where it's like, hey, you can go out and farm these Rift Keys, or you can go out and farm bounty mats by, you know, playing this tiny little, like, this pseudo game to hold you over until you can go back home and then play the primary experience, right? Like, I would be totally fine with that. I would actually I would do that a lot. I would play that a lot. I would be perfectly fine with that. But they're trying to take a full Diablo like ARPG and mixing in MMO elements. Like, not to say that, oh, we can only limit the amount of players that you could have in Diablo 3 to 4 because we don't want to have too much chaos going on in the on the screen. But on a mobile game where there's an interface all over the goddamn screen and the screen's only about 3 inches wide, we're also going to let you have like 20 fucking people on the screen. Like,
it makes perfect sense because 20 people pay more for microtransactions than three people do.
Exactly. It's an absolute cash grab. Now, when they announced the game, right? They announced the game. They didn't even show, like, they didn't say anything else about any other Diablo projects. It went right to, all right, now we're going to take some questions, because this Q&A, this big thing that they fucking hyped up, right after that, they had a block in the schedule so that they could talk about Diablo Immortal. Now, Diablo Immortal was playable on the show floor at BlizzCon. It's not available for everybody to download yet. From what I understand, it is literally only a demo of it, and the full game isn't even anywhere close to being ready to be released yet. So their primary BlizzCon announcement, even though they had all of this genuine content that was ready to go for all of their other games, they decided that they're going to announce this mobile game that's not even done yet for an IP that's been dead for, but they haven't been putting out significant content for a handful of years.
Thrilled.
Yeah. Not to mention, on April 1st of 2014, I will actually link this in the chat just so you could see it. On April 4th, 2014, Blizzard made a post that the next chapter in Sanctuary's epic saga has been unveiled. Summon your sickles and put on your pointy hood and get ready for Happy Reaper, the definitive Diablo experience coming soon to web and mobile. Not only mobile, web and mobile. It was their shit on all of mobile gaming. Like, no more than 4 years ago, the last time that Diablo got fucking content. It's almost laughable. Like, they're literally making the biggest ass out of themselves right now. Like, this is probably the largest PR blunder in gaming that I've seen in my entire life. Like, this is huge. Their stocks have dropped tremendously.
Ooh, like, have they?
Yes.
Oh, like, God.
Like, they, I think it was something like, I think they're already down, what, like 20% or something like that since
BlizzCon?
Something around, because it was like 10% one day and then it dropped like another 10% the other day. But yeah, they're not doing well. Not to mention the fact that, like, this BlizzCon is at like it's in a Western audience. It's in the US. It's for like, or no, isn't it up in Canada? It says US or Canada. I don't fucking remember. Anyway, they do it over stateside, basically. And this game is an absolute cash grab for China. So why wouldn't they just take this mobile game that's obviously, they're even coming out and say, like, it's so that we can get into the mobile market, because the mobile market is the primary market over in China. Why wouldn't you just announce it at some event over at China and have something else for the primarily PC, even if it was just a fucking some skulls and some dark shit, and you put Diablo 4 on the screen and it just says coming soon? Like, people would have been perfectly fine with this fucking game.
Coming 2025, and they would have been fine.
They did it earlier this year with Elder Scrolls. Elder Scrolls, they put out that, like, their they did it at E3. And it's same thing even with EA. EA did with Command & Conquer. Command & Conquer hadn't seen anything for how many years, and everybody's waiting to hear about a new Command & Conquer game, and then they put out this trailer for this mobile piece of shit, and they're just like, no. Like, they just, like, it got downvoted into oblivion on YouTube, and they just, like, they essentially said, like, all right, I guess the franchise is dead, and it's been completely abandoned. But Blizzard was like, oh, we could do the same thing and it'll totally go over fine. Like,
oh, yeah. And it did. Everybody's happy. Everybody's content.
The YouTube video for the trailer has, there's even another level of controversy with the YouTube video. So obviously with the backlash, I know it's,
you didn't even mention the Q&A.
It's gonna be a long day.
Yeah. You abandoned the Q&A. And yeah. Ian was looking forward to that.
So the Q&A. I had to talk about the April Fool's post because
I thought that's what you were leading to.
The first guy, I'm sorry, I'm just like, there's so much to fucking unpack. So, so the first guy in the Q&A, right? First guy in the Q&A, he says, is this an out of season April Fool's joke? Like, and he just kind of like awkwardly laughs. The entire crowd goes ballistic. They're clapping this guy up tremendously, right? Then another guy comes up to go and ask a question, and it's a valid question. He's just like, you know, I know that you mentioned that Diablo Immortal is primarily like a mobile experience. We've seen some things, like even in the trailer, they showed some mechanics that aren't even in D3 on the PC game, on the primary game. He was like, I saw some mechanics that were kind of neat in there that we've been looking for, like, I'd really like to try and play this on my computer. Is there any plan to put this on PCs at all? And Wyatt Chang was basically like, no. He was just like, and the whole crowd booed him. Like, you're at BlizzCon, like, that is your core audience with people that love your franchise, and you're getting booed.
I love the fact that they just outright booed him.
Like,
legendary remark.
And then he turns and goes, do you guys not have phones?
It was that went over really well, by the way. That went over fantastically.
Like, do you guys not have phones? It's not that we don't have phones.
It's that you don't want to play Diablo on a fucking phone.
I don't want to play Diablo on a tiny little fucking screen that's going to overheat when I play it for more than 5 minutes.
And it kills your battery, and that you have to use your thumb covering half the screen to do anything.
You're not even gonna see, like, they're trying to explain that it's gonna be like the like true Diablo experience, but on a phone. It is impossible for me to experience the same type of enjoyment on this game on a phone. In this, I don't even want to play that on a phone. Like. I would rather play Happy Reaper. Like, even just their design of that, they understood that mobile games are dumbed down, not ideal experiences, and not the ideal platform to be playing a game on. Not to say that there are bad, like, there are no good mobile games. I have played some decent mobile games, but if you're trying to explain that you want to create the best experience possible and the best game that you possibly can, you're not gonna choose a phone over PC when your entire consumer base is PC. Like, if you want to try something new, go for it. I don't give a shit. Don't make that your primary thing and abandon all of the people that have been supporting the franchise for how many years.
I would beg to differ that just from how much you've been ranting on the show that you do indeed give a shit.
I do. I do. Diablo literally is my favorite game of all time. Like, Diablo 2, whenever somebody asks me what my favorite game is, my immediate answer is Diablo 2. Like, I don't even have to think about it. I still play it. Like, it obviously hasn't aged well, and there's still a diehard fan base watches content of that's been out for how many years now. There's still a good loyal fan base because of how important that game was for gaming and the tone of it and the way that it played and the way that it actually progressed and the replayability of it. Like, even just like atmosphere alone, they've already said that this mobile game is going to be more accessible. The whole point of this mobile game is to make the entire franchise more accessible to new people. Which, again, it's not that I'm not trying to include other people into getting into the franchise. I love trying to get other people to play Diablo since it's my favorite game.
Just don't treat this as your biggest announcement.
Right. They've already, like, their president already said, like, we're dumping a decent amount of resources into this. Like, they're sharing stuff back and forth, but they're not building it from the ground up. And even just making those trailers, like, people had to work on those trailers that were specifically for Immortal. So even if they have other projects going on, they're not even announcing what, like, not even in the realm of what those projects could be. They, like, they had a comic book that was canceled right before BlizzCon, which, again, I understand if they're doing that, if you're working on another project that affects the lore, and then the lore gets all fucked up, and if you're doing a comic series and it gets all out of whack, like, yeah, I get it. But if you're talking about, like, we've got many things in the, like, our forges are burning hot because we're working on so, like, they're not even saying what the realm of the possibility of those projects could be. It could be fucking, I don't know, Diablo underwear at this point. I don't know. They're coming out of nowhere with their announcements. Like,
and weren't there rumors that there was supposed to be a Diablo 4 video?
A Netflix series, there was rumors for that. There was a guy that was, what the fuck was it? It was, the guy that directed Hellboy, I think. I told you about that like a couple weeks ago, didn't I?
No, I don't remember, no.
Cause I feel you like may I have. Hopped on and I, yeah. But so there was substantial evidence for other projects that were in the works. But for how uptight they're being with their information, like, they're not saying anything. Like, they saw how bad of a reaction this was, and they came out with, like, some post on their forums that essentially was just like, we're listening. Like,
yeah,
they're
sure. Not
doing, they're listening. And then they had a conference call that this just came out like a day or two ago, or it might have even been like yesterday. But they were on a conference call, or somebody recorded a conference call of them saying that the response was good for their investors meeting. That the response was good, or that it was muted, and that they still have a strong feeling that they, because, and let's be honest, this game's gonna make the money. People are gonna download it, and they're gonna make money. But it's gonna be on the backs of all of the fans that built this franchise up to what it is, and they're gonna get left in the dust. And that's exactly Chris, how I feel.
Be like, honest, are you going to download it?
I'm going to try it to objectively see, like, what it is like. I'm not giving them a penny of my money. Like, and I'm going to try it. And if it's worth me essentially, like, trying to play, I just can't see myself enjoying it. I've literally been going the past couple of nights. I tried downloading some of these NetEase-esque games because they're over in China. I can't really, like, I found an APK for one of them and I installed it onto my phone, and even without being able to read any of the dialogue, I tried playing it and I'm like, this fucking sucks. Like, like, I don't want to play this style of game on my phone. I've played plenty of games on my phone. I have other games installed on my phone, but an ARPG is not what I want to play on a phone. It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, I'm sure there's other people that would disagree. I'm sure there's people out there that are going to play this and they're going to be like, yeah, this is fine. But as someone that, like, this game developed how I judge every other game that I've ever played, to reduce that down to a while I'm taking a shit kind of thing, I just can't get on board with it. Especially, again, like, for them to say, like, we're gonna dump lore into this and we're gonna give you new content, even though we just ported Diablo 3 onto the Switch, but we're not gonna keep anything up to actually, like, support that either. Like, their only big announcements were literally, hey, we're gonna port our old game to a platform that you could take with you on the go, but we're also gonna take up your phone, which you're also taking on the go, to try and get you to play that too.
And the worst thing is, they just released Diablo 3 on the Switch, which lets you play Diablo on the go.
On the go. That's the whole, like,
mission why? Accomplished. Why? Done.
Why? There is no need for a mobile. You just released your mobile Diablo. Now you're releasing another mobile Diablo.
Ian says, Diablo, now you can fend off the legions of hell while taking a crap.
But you know what I mean? Like, that was literally everything that they were leading up to that. And they still, like, were all about the Switch version of Diablo at BlizzCon this year. So it's like, hey, we want you to take this with you. Oh, and by the way, we want you to take this with you too, so that you could not decide between which Diablo game you want to play while you're not at home. Like, what? Like,
the best guess would probably be that it's a case of how many people have a phone in their pocket versus how many people have a Switch in their bag.
Do you not have phones?
Yeah.
Phones?
Well, I don't have service on my phone, but I have a phone.
See now, and get this. It's an MMO. So don't have service on your phone? Tough shit. Can't play it. Not to mention, like, this is a gaming franchise that has a mode in it called Hardcore because it's based for hardcore gamers. You can't have hardcore mode on mobile because you lose service once, you're fucking dead.
Oh, man. Can you imagine losing a character because you lost reception?
Oh, yeah, I can. Just like I was when I was playing it on dial-up.
Mom, hang up. I'm playing Diablo.
Like,
not anymore.
They completely reduced that. Like, and again, to get a mobile game out into the Chinese market, there can't be gore. There can't be like any kind of blood. There can't be like Satan. Like it all has to just be monsters. Like,
really?
Yes. Like, it's, they're very like holistic and religious, and yes, like, it's like, for it to be like, because it's accessible at a youth level, they make sure that everything's essentially like family friendly to a degree.
That's like Rainbow Six getting updated to remove all the gore and violence from like the scenery and shit like that.
Chinese market.
Yeah.
So all of the grittiness and what made Diablo Diablo is out the fucking window. The name is literally Diablo. The name of the game is the devil. Like, how the fuck are you not going to have a gritty, dark theme to your game? Like, Diablo 3 was starting to degrade, and as in my opinion, as far as the way that it was presented, because it still was like kind of dark, but not really. Like, obviously there was a lot more of a whimsical side to it. The fact that there was a fucking rainbow level with unicorns, like, I kind of liked the irony of it, but at the same time, I kind of feel like they were almost practicing so that they could like put in assets that don't make any goddamn sense, so they could put it onto a mobile game, apparently. Like,
oh, Chris, I can tell you're so happy about this.
So when can we expect your review?
The game's so far out that I'm hoping that they cancel it. Like,
is there a date on it?
No. Like, they just said, hey, here's this thing, you could try this demo. Fuck you, we're gonna take your money. Like, the amount of dislikes on that trailer are insane. It is actually like, I'm pretty sure it is like one of the most disliked video, like the ratio, the percentage, what is it? It's 96%.
Oh my God.
Something like that. There was a lot of issues with people getting their comments censored on the video, and there's a lot of shenanigans on them re-uploading the video to try and remove the like how bad the dislikes were. There's been metadata that's compiled where right now what I'm seeing, this is from this is from a Reddit post. It's got a decent amount of like up to, I do trust it. It's like it's gaining a lot of traction. 21,000 upvotes to 566,000 dislikes.
Holy shit.
Now, some of those dislikes were varying. Like, it was fluctuating and decreasing by a decent amount. I would like to take my tinfoil hat off for just a moment and
don't wrinkle it though.
And say that I'm going to assume somebody probably made some sort of program out there to like bot and make new usernames to go in and log in and downvote this video. So maybe they were removing a bunch of faulty or spam dislikes, but it's just kind of, it doesn't come off well when the numbers keep fluctuating. And it's not like the upvotes and the downvotes are fluctuating. It's only the downvotes.
Gotta love it.
And obviously they're censoring a bunch of comments in the comment section itself. But some of them obviously being spam, but some of them that were genuinely like constructive criticism, and they started deleting them. Now, by most people's standards, I would assume, even though I don't have like any kind of like YouTube presence, I would assume that if you're going to delete someone's comments, you're only going to piss them off. Like, so that I feel like that's why they like specifically like their YouTube comments, like they're being berated the way that they are, because like when you censor someone, you're only going to make them louder, right?
Yeah.
I think that's why you're seeing such a huge backlash when it comes to this. But I think it's also because like Diablo has a large fan base. It like Diablo 3 is still, it's up there on the highest sold games, like as far as like revenue wise. I want to say it's like top 10, top 15 at least. They've made a lot of money off of Diablo. The fact that they don't want to support it and they moved it over to their classic game division boggles my mind. Like, it completely boggles my mind. And like, it's, yeah, I'm just not, it's bad, man. It's bad. It's just really, really bad. But the community has tied together pretty well in unifying and telling and letting them know, we're not going to deal with this shit. Like, we're not going to play it. This is a total cash grab. They're calling them out on it constantly. And Activision Blizzard still refuses to give any real answers. They just kind of like do the standard PR nonsense to patch it down. And I think they're just going to try and play it out. And hope that people will forget about it. Like,
and I don't think they will. I think this is going to be Activision's sense of pride and accomplishment.
The internet never forgets.
No. And of all, like, again, of all people, like, the Diablo community will not forget. You made them wait between Diablo 2 and Diablo 3 for how fucking long? And the travesty that was Diablo 3 when it came out. That game fucking sucked. Like, it was terrible. The balancing was absolutely horrendous. There was no, like, obviously the Real Money Auction House was a shit show, even though I made at least enough for me to pay for my copy of the expansion for free, but it was like $50 or $60 or whatever.
Damn.
But then it was people just playing the fucking auction house, not playing the actual game. It was just another cash grab. They had to have made so much money off of that auction house. It's unreal. Like, there was so much activity on that auction house, it was almost impossible to keep up with.
I'm more shocked they got rid of it.
I kind of know why they got rid of it. They had to have been like violating some sort of like some sort of taxation law or something like that for like virtual goods, because they had to have been making a killing off of it.
Yeah.
They had. And the government was probably like, whoa, 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 whoa. What is this about? Like, because I don't know if there's many other games that were just a because that was straight money. It wasn't like a currency that like has some sort of fictitious, like I'd say fictitious, but like a different value than just a standard currency. No, this was straight currency, Real Money Auction House. And I think that's what was like the thing that ultimately shut it down. They would have kept it in there, like, and people were pissed about that, obviously, just from a gameplay perspective. Like, that Diablo 3 is such, even though like it's visually appealing, and some of the mechanics feel a little bit more fluid, it is absolutely, like, content wise in my opinion, a watered down Diablo 2. Like, Diablo 2 has infinitely more replayability to me. The itemization is infinitely better. Like, it's not 5 different sets for each class, and that's all you get. No. You can't do anything outside of that. So it's just cookie cutter build 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for that character. 1, 2, 3, like, and it. I played every single variation of every single character. So what's left for me to do? There's no more progression left. It's just grind until your eyes bleed. Like,
which is what you do anyways.
But at least even in Diablo 2, there was still a genuine sense of progression. Like, there, I was still leveling up and making choices to shape my character the way that I wanted them to be. you couldn't even put stat points into your character in Diablo 3. Like, the fact that that is out the window, like, that was a travesty to me. Like, I understand, and again, like, I understand that you want to try and bring other people into the franchise, and I think Diablo 3 was a good iteration of that to try and bring people in. It's just not what the core audience wants. And the core audience has been very vocal about, like, how much they've wanted some sort of Diablo 2 remake or just more content for Diablo 3. They, like, again, not even a character pack. Like, a character pack, how long is that, honestly? Like, what kind of resources do you really need to put into that just to put another character in? Like,
I have no clue.
They haven't get, like, how the Necromancer pack has been out for, what, year and a half, 2 years? Something like that. So, no major actual content to the game for at least a couple of years. And then, here's a shitty Diablo fucking mobile game.
How many years were between 2 and 3?
I think it was, what, like 10, 15?
Damn.
Well, what are you guys bitching about?
Yeah, there's plenty of time.
You did fine. They're on record here.
Like, I understand, again, I understand that Diablo 4 is going to take some time. But the fact that you're going to hype this shit up the way that they did and then just dump out, like, a fucking mobile game. Yeah.
So, Chris, what do you think? Overall, BlizzCon was a roaring success, right?
No, not at all. like, you know you fucked up when, what the fuck is his name? Is like, a major, like, YouTube, like, personality. There has been so many people outside of the gaming, like, community as a whole that have been covering the story because of how shitty they did. Like,
yeah, we got you on. Normally, I wouldn't have covered it for nearly this long.
Well, sure.
Yeah. But no, what, like an hour 10 now of mostly Diablo?
It is something that I would genuinely, I would hope that you guys would look into it just because it is a pretty significant fuck up. Like,
oh, I know. I definitely kept up more on the subject because you were coming on.
Like, so. Definitely, I would suggest, like, there's a pretty comprehensive video by a YouTube personality called Quinn69. He's a Twitch streamer as well. Quinn69, he streamed Diablo 3 for many years. He's been a predominant member of the community. He goes over a lot of stuff, and he's got some memes in there, but he's got a good viewpoint on it, and I tend to share a lot of the same opinions with him. So if you want to have more of, like, a visual aid for some of this stuff, go check his video out. It's a little lengthy. It's probably about, like, 20-25 minutes.
You're saying something is lengthy when you just ranted about something for 40 minutes. And you're saying his video is lengthy.
Yeah. No, I know. But
oh, Chris, what are we going to do with you?
I genuinely believe there's a lot to unpack here. There is. And I've just been, like, I've been stewing on it, man. It's bad. Bad. Like, it's like, I genuinely feel abandoned by my like favorite company, like, genuinely.
I'm sorry, Chris.
Yeah,
my condolences.
As a fan of Diablo, I have now moved on.
Cole, what are your thoughts on the situation?
I mean, I understand why they want to make a mobile game. I really do.
Yeah, I get it too. Even... I totally get it. Like, it's a cash grab. Like,
yeah, I mean, gotta make money at this point. There's a healthy market for mobile games. And if you've got a franchise that has a fan base as large as Diablo, if you were going to pull any of your properties out of a hat, then that would be the lucky one to get to port to mobile. So, I mean,
I hear a kitty.
Yeah, he's got things to say. So, you know, it's logical. I'm a little concerned that maybe the reaction from the fan base, and I get why everybody's upset. I really do. But I'm a little concerned that this might be a case of, like, cutting off your own nose to spot your face.
This has not been the first time that they've pulled this shit. Like, they've been doing this a couple, like, similar type of fiascos.
Yeah.
And this is their only IP that they tend to do it with. Like, I understand if it's, like, if Diablo's a little too dark for the future of what you really want, Blizzard to be, mm-hmm. Then just stop developing stuff for it. Just be like, listen, like, this isn't just where we are as a company anymore. We're just gonna, you know... It was nice how it was, but, you know, it's over now.
We're going to shit in your mouths from now on with Diablo.
Right. Don't ring Diablo out for every drop that you could fucking get out of it.
I kind of just wondered if maybe they weren't trying to kill two birds with one stone and test the waters, be like, okay, we'll make a mobile game out of Diablo. If it does well, we see that Diablo still has that base and we can keep pushing for it. Because reality is they have to show investors, yeah, this game's been stagnant for 4 years, but it still has a player base. We can keep this franchise going.
DB, you know how you do it the right way? Like Hearthstone.
Like, I don't know. I don't follow Hearthstone.
So Hearthstone has been on mobile. It's one of their IPs. It was the first thing that they've done on mobile. So they made it themselves in-house. It runs great on mobile, and it's a perfect game for mobile because it's a card game. Like, card games are easy to play on mobile. Mm-hmm. Like, not an action RPG MMO.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
especially
man.
With a social, especially with a social aspect of it. Like, if you're going to try and encourage playing with other people, are you going to have a headset with a chat on your mobile game, like when you're playing your mobile game? Probably not. You're just going to, like,
that's because you're sitting on a pot taking a poop.
Right. You're going to have it in your hands, really far away from your face. It's going to look like shit because it's probably going to be about 4 inches tall. Like,
that's a wonderful out of context quote.
Sure. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to play a game that involved on that small of a screen, especially when you're going to have the interface covering 2/3 of the screen. You're only looking at about 1/3 of the center of your phone when you play it. Like,
I will say, though, I have seen people on both my Instagram and my Twitter feeds playing Diablo at BlizzCon. Diablo Immortal. So, I mean,
there was a lot of content creators that had already, like, promised that like, they had kind of already, like, said, like, because Riker said the same thing. He was like, I did not want to play this game, but they were kind of like, for him to say no to Blizzard, like, obviously he wants to try and build it. Again, he wants to build his community, so I get that he's going to try and play it, but at the same time, he even said, he's like, I didn't enjoy it. This game is not for me. Like,
no.
He's like, I'm going to try it a little bit. He's like, he's a content creator for Diablo. He's like, I'm not going to make videos. He's like, I'm not going to make videos about it because it's not for me. Like, there's a ton of people, prominent people that have supported Blizzard for years that are just like, listen, this isn't what I'm interested in. And they've already said that they're going to be developing more content specifically for Immortal to come for the next couple years. They're going to support it for years to come. They're going to play it as a games as a service, which Diablo was supposed to be, but hasn't been serviced in years. Like,
oh shit.
It's bad. It's like this literally is. I didn't think, well, with Mike Morhaime stepping down and all these other prominent, like, main people that have been at Blizzard since the beginning, or like have been there for years and years and years, with the acquisition of Activision, there has been so many people that have been dropping off. I think this really is like the last straw that makes me go, like, I guess the Blizzard that I once knew is long gone, because it really was like, even their approach to the way that they announced things and the way that they kept up with their communities, it's just not there. And it's with their other IPs too. The main, like, this happens with the WoW community, like, on a regular basis. Aside from them getting WoW Classic, like, there's plenty of people that are pissed with WoW Classic because of two primary things. Like, they're still making adjustments to the way that the game plays. Like, if it's going to be WoW Classic, keep it fucking classic. Like, don't change it. Like, make it like you're going back in time and it's just the game is exactly how it was at this moment. But they're still, like, they're putting on loot sharing and shards. They're still mechanically changing the game to make it more accessible for people.
I don't know what any of that means because I don't know what loot sharing or shards are.
I know what loot sharing is.
Yeah, kind of, but I don't play WoW, so I don't really know.
Well, it's basically like it's mobs, like auto-spawning and stuff like that.
Mm.
So the way that it was in WoW Classic, like, you would have to run over and, like, let's say you had to kill 10 wolves or whatever. You go over to the section of the woods, and you would have to be the person that runs over and kills the wolf. If anybody else was in that area, there was only, like, one drop, and one person would get credit for killing that mob. And then you would have to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait until one of them finally respawned again, and then you had to try and go over and get one. So, like, there wasn't enough kills for each person that was in the game.
That sounds miserable.
But it was the classic experience. And the other thing that kind of, like, that kind of encouraged a sense of community was there's going to be good people that are on the game, and they're going to go, hey, I noticed that you're trying to do the same quest. We should group up. And then you play together and you get to know them. And then it's like, hey, that's the social aspect friendships of being in a, right. And then you've got shitty people that just come around and steal the things. And you got to get a sense of knowing that there's shitty people and good people. That's just how the world works. So it's a living and breathing community. You take that out of it, and it's just everybody mindlessly running around doing whatever the fuck they want. Like, I just feel like if it's going to be a classic experience, they're pushing it as a classic experience and going back in time and playing it the way that it was initially intended. I don't think they should make those types of changes. Although I do say that, like, for a more accessible way, like, yeah, like it's integral for that. But if you're literally trying to sell it as the way that it was supposed to be, then it's not. Like, it's, I don't know. Like,
Ian disagrees and says loot sharing is a must.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big thing that's in the WoW community right now, though, because I've been keeping up with that a lot too. I try to keep up with a lot of Blizzard IPs because, again, I've been like a Blizzard fanboy for pretty much my entire life.
Yeah,
I'm out now, man. Like, this is
the main turkey, thing is, you're done.
He's gonna play Diablo after this. What are you talking about?
No, here. Do you want to know what my other goal for today was? No, you're gonna really appreciate this because I saw it that it was in your Steam library and I didn't know that you had it. My goal for today is to go up to GameStop and get a Steam card so that I could get Grim Dawn, and I'm gonna play Grim Dawn.
Oh, nice!
Because I love action RPGs, and Diablo was my favorite, and I think it's time for me to find another favorite.
Well, if you ever want to play, what are they, the Van Helsing games on Xbox, you could always play those. A bunch of those have been free with gold.
Yep. I think I have a couple of them.
Play together. Or Victor Vran, that's a co-op game. That was fun. We should play that sometime. We'll do the Motorhead stuff together.
Yeah. I right now, my main thing is I really want to try Grim Dawn. Grim Dawn, they just put out an expansion. Or the expansion's coming out in like a week or two. Same thing with Path of Exile. Path of Exile is making another big patch in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I think the best way, the most constructive way that the majority of people that I've spoken to, that I've been friends with from the Diablo community, most of us are all independently just trying out other games, and we're just kind of like, we're just kind of done with Diablo in general.
Yeah, I know the Path of Exile subreddit has been blowing up with new players.
Oh, yeah. Of course. My phone's going off. Hold on.
Oh, man. Cole, should we... we're going to have to move on to reviews here soon, but did you want to do them now or later tonight?
Well, now I'm in a position like my kids are going to be home soon.
Yeah.
I warned you.
All right. I guess we're doing this again later.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Chris, it is always good having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts before we take a break?
No king rules forever.
remember the order.
That's fine. We're starting with Call of Cthulhu. That's okay. All you need to know. Oh, my throat is so raw from earlier.
You know how sometimes I doodle on my notes? Mm-hmm. For some reason, I drew an ostrich with its hand and its head in the sand on the Call of Cthulhu review.
Interesting.
I don't know why.
I don't even question you anymore. It's just things happen.
I was like, most of it's like random shit, like a tree and some leaves and some curly cues, and then there's like this really super detailed ostrich. What was I doing?
You crazy. I think that's the only solution or the only answer to this riddle. You crazy. All right, recording's going. I'm going to start.
Okay.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks again to Chris for hanging out with us and keeping us company and talking incessantly about BlizzCon.
I feel like Chris really liked Diablo.
Just a little.
But not anymore.
Although, be back.
I think he's jaded. And it's like when Call of Duty does dumb shit, and then I'm like, fuck Call of Duty. And then I play the next one next year anyway.
I'm waiting for Chris to get the Diablo Immortal when it comes out and just become
completely addicted to it. Yeah. He's gonna get hooked and then be like, oh my God, I love Diablo. And then I'd be like, you want to play Rocket League with me? And he'd be like, no, because I'm playing Diablo Immortal. I got to take a crap. You get off the pot.
Like, Chris, what are you doing? Chris
sounds like, for the record.
Chris, I've been trying to call you for the past hour. He's like, dude, I know I was like hard on that game. But, like, it's really, really good. It's really addictive.
I feel like your Chris impersonation might be slightly better than mine. Only slightly. I was about to tell you that I wasn't going to be able to read my review because my cat just laid down on it, but he moved.
Good, because we have a lot of reviews to take care of.
We do. We have a few. It's been a busy week.
It has. Things are starting to pick up, which worries me because the holidays are coming and I was hoping to like take a couple weeks off, honestly, around MAGFest and Christmas. Like maybe give the show a rest for a little bit, just enjoy some time off, refresh, recharge. Like shit keeps releasing.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because D recently was like, you need to take some time for you. And I was like, I know. I'm busy, I get stressed out, and then I have like 2 days and I'm fine and I hit it again and then I'm busy for like 5 where I hate everybody. and then I could really benefit from just like a week where I just go, no, I'm good. I'm just going to sit here and paint and make keychains. But then like all the good shit's coming and I don't want to miss out on all the good stuff. Like, this week we had some really good games and I had a lot of fun playing shit. And next week Spyro's coming out and I can't not play Spyro.
True. I have my copy pre-ordered and pre-installed already, so I'm ready for it.
That's good. If we get it for review, that means you're just going to give it to me. I love when you have shit pre-installed.
We don't get much from Activision, so I wouldn't get my hopes too high, but how weirder things have happened.
I have given them 2 glowing reviews on Call of Duty. They owe me Spyro. Well,
different PR people handle different games, so.
Don't care.
I guess we'll see. I like how D's telling you, it's like, maybe you should ease up on reviewing things. Oh, wait, you're being offered Farming Simulator? Fuck it, keep reviewing.
That would have been grounds for divorce if I'd said, I can't even because it's embargoed. Never mind. Keep going. Carry on.
Anyway, let's dive into the reviews because we have a lot to talk about. First game to talk about tonight is called Call of Cthulhu, the official video game developed by Cyanide Studio, published by Focus Home Interactive, released October 30th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $59.99. Venture to Darkwater Island to solve the mysterious circumstances around the murder of Sarah Hawkins and her family. Based on the pen and paper RPG by Chaosium Incorporated, Cyanide Studios adaptation explores the depths of Lovecraft's dark and oppressive work while bringing Cthulhu mythos to life in video game form. Cole, tell us about this one.
So this is a very dark, gritty first-person experience. I use the term experience. It's not quite a walking simulator. It's not quite narrative heavy. There is some point and click action going on. If you've played or seen gameplay of Vampire or Vampyr, however you're supposed to pronounce it, it's very similar to that in playstyle, in that you're looking for clues in the world and you're interacting with the NPCs, and the way that you communicate with them affects the outcome of your game and what kind of options are available to you. In addition to just how you interact is also affected by how you build your character. So there is that RPG element, like you mentioned in the summary. You play as a washed up private investigator who may or may not be an alcoholic. That's up to you. You actually choose whether he drinks or not throughout the game. His name is Edward Pierce, and he is on the brink of losing his license for not taking enough cases. So he is presented with the case of the Hawkins family, who have perished in a fire that is nothing short of questionable. So it's up to you, as Pierce, to uncover what's really happened with this family. There is some occult behavior going on, of course, because this is based on an H.P. Lovecraft writing. So things get very shady very quickly. if we go back to the RPG element, Pierce as a character is really kind of just intended to be like a shell representative for the player. And you're really just supposed to kind of put yourself in his boots. He has no real backstory beyond being a washed up PI. Literally everything involving the character is dependent on what you choose for him. You do have the options of assigning character points to certain aspects. Eloquence, for example, is one of them, which I clearly don't have because I keep saying Eloquence being one of them. So if you add your character points to eloquence, you have better investigative options when you're talking to people. So you can get more information out of them without having to like break down and bust their faces open.
Nice.
Another option would be to put your character points into strengths, so you can bust down their heads if they're getting in your way. Psychology, so that you have a better understanding of their motives for when you're investigating, you can see, oh, okay, this person fell here, but how and why? You have a little more information when you do investigate something. The other options are occultism and medicine. These two, you cannot just assign your character points to. You have to actually find books in the world on occult and medicine in order to level those two aspects up. So if you roll through the game and you don't really go out of your comfort zone and you don't explore the world and really take in what it has to offer, you're not going to level those up, and it can make the game a little harder for you. Whereas if you take your time, you really poke through everything, you're going to level that up a little more and you're going to do a little better when you're uncovering clues. The last element that you can level up is secret spots. Basically, like there's secret clues that are hidden around. And if this element is really low, Pierce will just like gloss right over them. They don't light up at all. However, if you've got it leveled up a little bit, then these items, you will first get an indicator that kind of flashes and lets you know that you're in a room that has a secret item. And eventually, leveling it up more lets those items actually glow green, so you know, oh shit, that's something I need to go find. It's for me, I found it most ideal to level up eloquence and the secret items just so I was able to get more details with less effort, because I'm a point and click whore. And I didn't want to have to go through fighting with people if I didn't want to. So it was just a lot easier to play the game that way for me. But that's the beauty of it, is that it it really is up to you how you want to experience this game. The downsides of the game is that it's not that pretty.
No.
And I kind of lie about it. The worlds are really detailed, like the environment, super detailed. There's just something off about the character models. They remind me very much of like 360 BioShock Infinite.
Hmm.
There are some scenes where, you know, their animation is a little better and stuff, but there's a lot where the character models are just kind of janky, and they're clipping weird, and there's almost like there's too much contrast on their faces, and it just looks off and kind of comical. You're just going, you're weird, and I can't put my finger on why. Other than the, you know, janky animations and the clipping, I had, whenever I play any kind of first-person game or any game, honestly, any game, the first thing I do is I crank my sensitivity way up. Even with my sensitivity really high, it felt like there were moments where I would be trying to move the cursor over something that I wanted to interact with, and it just wouldn't go. It would just either move incredibly slowly, or it would just like stop, and for whatever reason, it wouldn't hover over whatever item I was trying to click to save myself. Generally speaking, this game is slow enough that that's okay, and it didn't bother me. There are occasional moments where like you need to move fast and you need to like refill your oil on the fly. Jesus, that sentence is going to come across awful. But you really just
on the fly.
But
if only Ian was still around.
Oh, he would have had a field day with that one. That's gonna show up in the chat next week. But it does make it a little harder, and it does kind of just set you up for failure. And thankfully though, the game is like really forgiving with checkpoints. So no matter how many times I fuck myself up, I wasn't too far behind anyway, and it turned out good. Fine. Yeah. Other than that, I had a couple instances of crashes, and there are some longer load times. Those, again, though, I'm on the 1S, and that may be just more of an S issue, and they might not seem that long if you're on an X. So that's awesome. Just something to take into consideration. Beyond that, though, I thought it was a really cool story. I thought it was really unique. I'm not super into H.P. Lovecraft stuff. Like, I find it very hit or miss, and stuff that's inspired by it, I'm just like, eh. But this one was really well done. I loved that there were, you know, some really interesting, I'm trying to find the right word, ways that the character that was an artist, I'm not trying to give away spoilers, that the character that was an artist and the way her art affected the world and how she was perceived and how that fit into the story. I just thought all that was so cool. It was really interesting, but it did have a few issues.
Well, then overall for $60, what do you think of it?
I'm going to give it a really recommended try. It's not going to be for everybody though. And like I said, even for me, as much as I love horror and stuff, like H.P. Lovecraft stuff is just a little out there. But especially if you like things that are inspired by his work, you're not going to want to miss it.
Sounds good.
Next.
Shifting gears dramatically, the next game to talk about is called Carnival Games.
First, we're going to scare you off with Cthulhu, and then we're going to bring you back with Carnival. I don't know. Clowns are spooky.
I didn't plan out these reviews that well this week to go from Lovecraft to Carnival Games, but next game to talk about is Carnival Games, developed by Mass Media Games, published by 2K, released November 6th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $39.99. Carnival Games brings the party back for the entire family with both fan favorite and brand new minigames all in one package. Hit home runs, pile the highest stack of cakes, and take your horse to the finish line. 20 total minigames will have you and your friends stepping right up to win again and again. As you can tell, this is a minigame compilation. Mm-hmm. 20 different games. I have played 18 of them. The game starts off with 8 of them unlocked. The other 12 you have to earn tickets in the games and save up enough to unlock them. The two left for me are like 1,000 tickets and 700 tickets. So that's why I haven't played all of the mini games yet.
Yikes.
But the ones I did play, all of them have been pretty fun. Like there haven't been any stinkers out of the bunch that I've played. The game is divided into four different sections. Each one has five different mini games available for it. Two will be open from the start. The rest you have to unlock, obviously. You go into the game, you will always have four players. So it'll be you and either, you know, three friends, three AI people, a mix of that. You're able to play solo or as teams, which I thought was fun, having a computer partner to face off against two other computers, which is always fun. I just lost my train of thought.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
How similar is this to the 360 version?
I've never played the 360 version.
Really?
Well, the 360 version was Kinect, wasn't it?
I think it was better with Kinect, but not necessarily Kinect.
I thought it was a Kinect mandatory game. I don't remember, though. It's been quite a while since I played. I did play some of the games on the Wii. Those were all motion controlled. Everything in this game, done on the controller. There's no motion controls in this game, at least on the Xbox One, the version that we played. I'm not sure if the Switch version might have motion controls in some of the titles. I can definitely see it happening. But based on the Xbox version, obviously no motion controls, no Kinect usage. All the games are done with the controller. Most of them are simple, just aim and shoot, or press the A button, steer around, jump. Everything is fairly simple because these games are geared towards younger audiences, so nothing is super complex in this game. Again, there are the four sections, five mini games in each one. You play through the games to earn tickets. The tickets are used to unlock other games. They are used to unlock bonus music tracks in the games. You can also unlock character customization items. They do have a little bit of a character customization section there. Nothing too, like, you're not going to be able to create a perfect avatar for yourself. They don't even have beards in the game, so I couldn't make myself. They don't even have bald heads. I was sad about that because I'm a bald fatty and I couldn't make myself in the game.
That face. That would have been a good opportunity to use the new Xbox avatars.
It would have, but I'm not sure how tight Microsoft has those locked down.
I don't know.
I'm not a fan of the new avatars anyway, so whatever.
I like my new avatar because she rides a unicorn. She's a pretty princess, bitch.
Of course you love it. Why wouldn't you love it? Like I said, all the games are pretty straightforward. Everything plays pretty simply. Out of the 18 games I played, some of my favorites are the Home Run Derby. Really enjoyed that one. I enjoyed the ball rolling horse derby. You know, at the fair, you roll the balls into the holes and the horse runs across the stage.
Yeah. It's that like one. Ski ball mixed with horse racing.
That one was super, super easy to play. That one, you just aim forward and shoot the ball repeatedly as quick as you can, and you'll win every time. I smoked the computers with that. Really enjoyed the ring toss one as well. And the main reason I like the ring toss one is because I would routinely get 50, 60 tickets off of that game. This leads to my biggest gripe with the game. Everything takes way too long to unlock. Tickets trickle in. There were some games that you would earn like 9-10 tickets after doing a fairly solid run. Obviously, the better you do, the more tickets you're going to unlock. I haven't found too many games that would really dump tickets on you like the ring toss game would. Of course, you would spend a lot more time playing that one because it's based on rounds and how long you can last and how high your score can get. But all the other games I played just seemed to trickle tickets at you. The, you know, Home Run Derby, I would get maybe 20, 25. The Ball Rolling Derby, I would get maybe 15, 16, 17. The point is, a lot of the games just don't give enough tickets, and it drags the game down because you just want to get to play all of these games, unlock everything, get to playing everything. They do have tournaments. Tournaments are based on either a world tour of playing everything you have unlocked right away, which if you're going for achievement hunting, you're going to want to do that first, because playing a 10-game tournament or an 8-game tournament is going to be a lot quicker than playing a 20-game tournament.
Yeah.
Obviously. The tournaments are a decent way to earn extra tickets, because you'll earn the tickets based on the game, and then a bonus tickets based on your standing in the tournament. So the best way I found to earn tickets in this game is to do a tournament, possibly team if you want to burn through those achievements, and just play the ring toss over and over and over, and you'll earn a fairly decent amount of tickets to unlock games. Besides that, I don't really have any negatives with the game. It's fun. It's cute. It's got fun games in it. Nothing stands out as bad. Everything is enjoyable. It looks cute. I guess the only other thing I hate is the Carnival Games guy, like the ringmaster, needs to shut up. He talks so much, and like I'll be throwing rings. He's like, "You're supposed to get them on the post." I'm like, "Motherfucker, I have so many more points than anybody else in this game right now." I am ringing these goddamn posts. Don't give me shit. I got this on lock. I am earning tickets on this game. Or like playing the home run derby. He's like, "Oh, when are you going to hit one out of the park?" I'm like, "I have a streak of 4 home runs going." Get off my ass. he talks a lot, and he kind of needs to shut up. Do you have any questions about it?
No, I already asked my question. I'm good now.
Well, then for $40 on this one, I am going to give it a recommend to try it. If you have kids, if your kids have friends and they all come over and play games, this is a really, really fun one. You might want to sit down and play a bit yourself to unlock some of the games. I wish either all of the games were unlocked at the start, or they were better about giving you more tickets after games, because like I said, I put a lot of time into this game, like a lot of time into this game, and I still have 2 games I haven't unlocked yet. So just give me more tickets.
Give, please.
But yeah, recommend to try. It's a lot of fun, and it's cute. Good for kids.
Good.
Next game to talk about is called The Shapeshifting Detective, developed by Devaki Studios, published by Wales Interactive. Released November 6th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Steam for $12.99. The Shapeshifting Detective is a supernatural noir murder mystery FMV game where you play as a detective who can shapeshift into other characters, allowing you to unlock secret conversations and private encounters. Cole, tell us about it.
So this is my first experience with one of these FMV games, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to get out of it. You think that there's going to be a lot of limitations when you're playing a game where the responses are live action recorded. It doesn't seem like there's too many places for you to go once you've chosen an interaction.
Oh, you would be surprised.
There are 1,600 FMV responses in this
Holy
game.
Holy shit.
1,600. Every time you start it up, it chooses from one of 3 random murderers. There's a ton of different ways that it could go. And depending on how you approach the questions. And I guess I should specify, you're playing as a shape-shifting detective who has gotten in trouble and been outed as a shapeshifter before. So the agency has sent you to try to redeem yourself by researching the murder of 21-year-old Dorota Shaw. Dorota was a respected cellist who had received a scholarship to Juilliard, but she was found murdered in her bed the night before. So your job is to come into this tiny town and investigate all the people who were around Dorota and could have had something to do with her death. There's an interesting twist in that her death was predicted by a group of traveling tarot card readers.
Interesting.
So these were the only people who knew she was going to die, essentially. And their tarot cards and Ouija board readings can kind of help you, but also throw a wrench in things if they're wrong. And they can be wrong. And the way that you investigate this murder is simply by you have a series of options for questions or statements that your character can make. You play as Sam, and then so you'll go visit a character that you want to interrogate or ask questions to or get information from. You'll choose from the options, and you'll get pre-recorded videos that they play out more like you're having a one-to-one conversation, as opposed to like you're not watching a video on a TV or something. It's a one-to-one conversation with your character. Then what you can do once you've actually had the initial conversations with Sam is anybody that's currently available that you've met, you can go back to your room and shapeshift into that person. Now, there's a hitch. Obviously, you can't go to the person while you're shapeshifted as them. And you have to be mindful of how you ask questions and how you behave with certain characters when you are interviewing them as somebody else, because that can come back to bite you later. You have one main job in addition to finding Dorota's murderer, and that is, don't get caught shapeshifting. Don't let anybody know what you're doing.
Seems easy enough.
It's not. But it's an interesting dynamic, and it really changes the way that you interact with the game. There's actually an achievement for shapeshifting into everybody in the game at some point.
Nice.
So, and again, I'm on my fourth playthrough, and I haven't done it. It's not as easy as it seems. So in addition to, you know, getting information, you'll have to make certain decisions, and you'll have to meet with the police chief, who's aware that you have a record that needs buried and that you fucked up somewhere along the line. And he's aware of what you can do. He's the only person that knows what you can do. And I'm not even sure. I don't really think he's got the full extent of it. He just knows you've gotten into trouble in the past and he has to bury something for you. As you interact with the different characters while shapeshifting, that gives you different conversation points that you can use to piece together what actually happened to Dorota. And like I said, they choose from one of three possible murderers each time the game starts. So there's a lot of ways that with 1,600 pre-recorded responses, there's a lot of different paths that this can end up on. And you may think you've got everything in the bag and then find out that you chose the wrong murderer and shit goes very, very sideways and has unintended consequences for you and for the people you've been interacting with. I was really surprised with how this played out and how well I enjoyed it. And I had an incredible time, and I want to complete it, but I've got to shapeshift into everybody.
I feel like I don't even need to ask, but $13, what do you think of it?
It's only $13?
Yep, $12.99.
Just buy it. Oh my God, it was so good. It's one of those games that you can have a lot of fun with without having to exert a lot of effort into, but it still gives you something to look forward to because it just plays with your mind so much.
Nice. Sounds good.
I enjoyed it. Next!
Next game to talk about is called Agents vs. Villain, developed and published by Process Games, released November 7th on Xbox One for $19.99. An evil cat has invented time travel and travels in time to manipulate promising people into doing this evil work. Several of the secret spy agencies in the world has noticed the anomalies in time and forged a makeshift alliance to bring this evil cat down. However, they all want the glory of bringing the villain to justice and claiming the glory of being the best secret agent in the world. Colt, what is Agents versus Villain?
This is the most non-cooperative co-op game I've ever played. I want to go ahead and lay on the line. You cannot start this game if you do not have at least three controllers plugged in. Whether you got somebody else to play those other controllers is up to you. But you cannot play it unless there's three controllers plugged in.
Yeah, designed for three or four people.
Yeah, there is no AI option. It is just people or get the fuck out. That's probably my only real complaint about this game, too, is like, I'm okay with that if it had online. it could really benefit from online if you don't have enough people to actually play it with you. Because it's a really cool experience otherwise, and it's completely locked off to people who don't have people to local co-op with.
Tell us what you do in the game.
So you kind of put most of it in the summary there, in that there's an evil cat who is time traveling, and you got to stop him. But the actual agents who are trying to stop the evil cat, they're not really on board with helping each other. They all want to be the one to save the world. So while trying to get through each level, which is set up like a platformer, essentially, you have a maze-like platforming level, and there's various traps. Up to three people can play as the agents, and one person plays as the evil cat. If you are tasked with being the evil cat, you get the benefit of being the person who chooses what level you play on. And while playing the level, you control the traps. So at each level is laid out differently with miniguns and spears and trap doors. And basically what you want to do is catch the agents when they're in these precarious positions where you can hit them with a trap, kill them, send them back to the beginning. The agents are going to be trying to maneuver through that level until they get to the end and can actually take on the boss. Meanwhile, they're going to be fighting each other as they're trying to get to you. So they will be hitting each other, trying to knock each other into traps and stuff in order to earn the most points and have all the glory for themselves at the end of the game. Once you get through the platforming levels and actually make it to the boss battle, again, one person is still the cat, and the three other people will be playing as the agents. One thing that I found really interesting about these boss battles is that given that this is an asymmetrical multiplayer, there was a lot of opportunity for this to go toward the unfair side. There's always that challenge when you have one versus three or four.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this game did an incredible job of balancing the level design so that both the players and the evil villain had equal opportunities to fuck each other up. What I did find interesting when I played this with the girls was that they would go after each other pretty damn brutally up until they got to the boss level. And then during the boss level, they were oddly tuned to want to help each other.
Interesting.
Because there's some boss levels where you have to like take down a shield before you can actually attack the boss, or you have to trigger different terminals in order to like set off lasers or something. And I found that they would be more willing to work together during those boss levels just because they found themselves united in the common good of taking out mom. And it was savage. Prior to that, they were more than willing to throw each other into traps and get a giggle fest out of it. Because there's no way to lose during that phase. It's just fuck each other up and try to get the most points. But once it came down to, oh, we could lose, mom's got to go. There are five available levels, each with different bosses and different ways to play them. I thought they were really creative. None of them felt like you were like just recycling the levels. They were all designed uniquely. However, I do wish there were more than five. You can run through the five fairly quickly. And then you're sitting there going, okay, but now what?
Just replay the ones you already did, I guess.
Yeah, just replay. And you're going to be replaying a lot because how many times did you have to get killed for that one achievement?
There's an achievement that you have to end up bringing in 50,000 agents.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That is absurd.
Because at any given time, the max number of agents in the game is three.
Yes.
And so, you know, even when you're just like straight up murdering whoever you're playing with savagely because they don't know how to double jump, then you're still not going to get a whole lot at a time. And this kind of just feels like padding. And I wouldn't mind, like I said, I wouldn't mind an achievement like that where you have like an obscene amount of kills to rack up if you just had more variety for levels to do it in.
Yeah.
But because you're just forced to do it, that's like 100,000 deaths per level or something. It's just obscene. It's just, I don't know.
It's a lot of death grinding for achievement whores out there.
And it's just, it feels like forced replay. And it's fun. The game is fun and you'll want to replay it anyway, but not to the extent to get that many kills with only 5 levels to choose from. Now, if DLC came out and they were like, hey, we added more levels and they're free. And then like, okay, that's a different story.
And then the question is if that achievement works, because I ran into a handful of the achievements not working. I have been in touch with Process Games. They are aware of the issue and they are working on fixing it. Not sure how quick a patch is going to be out for it, but they do know and they have found what the issue is. So the achievements are being worked on. It would just suck to grind out 50,000 kills over days, weeks, months, who knows, and then not pop.
Get it. Yeah.
Because the 500 kill did not pop for me.
I don't think I'm even close to the 500. And I played a lot. I didn't get close to the 500.
Oh, and there's no achievement tracking.
Yeah.
So you don't know how close you are.
Yeah. I could be closer. I don't know. I don't think I've gotten that close. We played with the girls and we played through all the campaigns maybe 2 or 3 times, but I don't think we got that close.
I played with Ashley and my cats.
Just like put some catnip on the controller and they roll around on it while you're playing.
Well, Ashley and I would take turns being who the actual cat is, and then, you know, the other controllers were just there so we could play the game.
And that's kind of a disappointment. I understand why you need at least, because there's the whole, you know, fuck over the agents too aspect of it. So I understand why you need 3 people to start it, but it would have been nice if it could have been filled in with bots.
Yeah. It would have been nice to have any kind of single player content in the game, because I think it's cool as hell.
Yeah, it's really unique. It's not the kind of game that you think of when you think of an asymmetrical multiplayer title.
Yeah. The only other issue I might have with the game comes down to our verdict. $20 on it seems kind of high for me.
Yeah. I gotta agree. I wouldn't have thought $20.
Like $15, I could see. $13, like Shapeshifting Detective would work. Yeah. I think $10 might be too cheap for it. But 20 just seems a smidge on the high side, given that there's no single player content.
Yeah. And even with what's there, there's only 5 chapters. So,
I mean, to be fair, each of the chapters has 3 platforming stages and a boss battle. So there is a decent amount of content there. It just, it's going to get old fast.
Yeah.
So overall, $20 on it. I give it a try it, and if you have friends to play with, it bumps up closer to the buy it rating. But you obviously need to have friends for this.
Yeah, I agree with a try it. Maybe consider it more if you've got people to play with regularly. But if you're more of a lone wolf player, then you might just want to slide by.
And if you're an achievement hunter, got some bad news for you.
I would like, and the sad part is that other than those crazy grindy achievements, it's a quick completion.
Yeah.
So you just set up the controllers and be like, here we go.
Yay.
You know, but there's nothing achievement whores love more than being able to set up dummy controllers and get completions. So it's like the perfect situation, and yet it's borked at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, man. Anyway, next game to talk about is Noir Chronicles City of Crime, developed and published by Artifex Mundi, released November 9th on Xbox One for $14.99. Step into the shoes of Alfred Fox, a private eye with a knack for getting into trouble, and confront the danger looming over your old flame, Barbara LePere. Using your own intuition and wide investigation techniques, you'll follow the intrigue and face many, sometimes deadly, consequences. Cole, what is Noir Chronicles City of Crime?
Noir Chronicles City of Crime is the first Artifacts Monday game to not be headlined by a female protagonist, and what is this world? I started this and I'm like, wait, why am I still a dude? What the fuck is this? I was completely thrown off. One of my favorite aspects of Artifacts Monday games is that they're all headlined by a female. And it's rare to see that kind of consistency in games these days.
They're changing it up on you.
They threw me for a loop. The good news is that's the only place they really fucked with me. So, so it's forgivable. We need diversity in games, and that goes for men too. You play as Alfred Fox. He is a private investigator. I don't know what the theme of washed up investigators is this week, but here we are.
Yeah.
Here's another one. So he's receives a call at the beginning of the game that an old flame, as you put it, is in trouble, and he makes it to her in not enough amount of time. I'd say spoiler alert, but that's the whole premise of the game, is that you have to solve the murder. So yeah. She dies. One of two female characters in the game, and she eats it in the beginning.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. What is this? Artifacts Monday has turned on me. It is an interesting murder mystery, though. There's a lot of little twists and turns in the story. It is classic point-and-click hidden object puzzle goodness, though. I feel like this may be one of their earlier releases on PC, in that the art style is definitely more cartoonish and amateur and not quite as fantastical as what we've seen in the past from them. So they may start be like getting to the bottom of the barrel. Not in a bad way, just in a this is what we started with kind of way. But The facial animations were a little smoother than some of their older games have been, but there was still a lot of just like blocky movements in cutscenes, and it was not near as animated and lively as what we've seen in past games.
Just a quick update. This game actually originally released in January of this year, and it's developed by Brave Giant.
Maybe that's so, the difference.
It is not developed by Artifacts Monday. I have to update my notes on that.
Yeah, we've seen them do that before, where they publish these games instead of develop them. So that's not a bad thing. And there's usually quirks with each of the different studios that develop for them. House of Fables, you can spot a House of Fables game immediately. So that explains a lot of the little nuances that were different here. One of the other aspects of this game is that it does not have a hidden object minigame alternative. So if you're stuck in a hidden object puzzle in most Artifacts games, you can press down on the D-pad and play something like Mahjong or a memory card game instead, and still complete and carry on. This game does not have any alternative puzzles. It does have some different mini games throughout, however. We usually see the kind of puzzles where you have to trying to think of how to describe them. You'll have like runes and things like that you have to manipulate, or the circular puzzles that you have to rotate and align up. There isn't anything like that. I can't even English at this point.
They're done ain't nothing.
Nope. Ain't never did a damn thing. There's nothing like that in this one. They do reuse the knot puzzle. If you've played other Artifacts Monday games, you know that sometimes there will be like a jumble of knots, and you have to move the knots around so that none of the ropes intersect each other anymore.
Oh, that one.
Yeah. They reused that one like 4 times in this game, and I kept going, what?
Again?
Yeah, it made sense in the context of the game that, you know, oh, you're a PI and you're tying people up or you're untying them, or, but at the same time, you're just like, I'm not used to the same puzzle being repeated so heavily. Likewise, they reused the puzzle a lot where you would have a book and the story is told after you find certain objects in the picture scene. And they reused that one 2 or 3 times. So I was just very surprised to see the recycling of the puzzles, because that's not typical to Artifacts Monday. But they did help push the story along better, as opposed to like having something that was completely unrelated that you had to rotate or whatever. So at least they made sense in the context of the story, even if they were a little repetitive. There is, and usually when these games are developed by an outside studio, they don't have a bonus chapter, but this one actually does.
Nice.
So that makes up for the lack of an alternative minigame. It does give you a little something extra to play through in addition to the actual campaign. There were also the alternative minigames that I started to talk about and I got sidetracked on. But you have one instance where you're being investigated because, of course, you're standing in the room with the dead body. They think you did it. So and so you have to talk with the police chief and give him your alibi, and you have to try to convince him to believe you. Or there's a couple of instances where there's actual combat sequences.
Really?
But rather than like taking you into the third person and having you punch or something, it plays almost like a Simon Says type game. So you'll have a left icon and a right icon of fists, and it'll be like the left will blink, the right will blink, the left will blink, and you have to repeat back that sequence. Yeah. So that's how they handle the combat sequences. So overall, there's some good changes. There's some not so good changes. The repetitiveness being the biggest downside here, but it is still pretty much what you're going to expect when you load up an Artifacts Monday game. It's a super quick completion. Probably takes about 3 hours, maybe 4 if you're very bad at puzzles. If you're very bad at the not puzzle, then you might push it to 5. But I don't want to say it's a classic Artifacts Monday because it's not. It's got the changes where it's a different studio, but you're not going to be disappointed if you pick it up and you're expecting an Artifacts Monday game.
Yeah. Well, for $15, what do you think?
Do you give it a buy it? It's Artifacts Monday. Of course I'm giving it a buy it. At this point, they'd take me out behind the woodshed if I didn't.
True. We might be contractually obligated to give them buy it from now on.
At this point. It's just, I've played so many and I've liked them all that if I ever don't like one, like the whole world's just going to explode.
It might
be. That's how the apocalypse really starts. They don't tell you that, but that's how the apocalypse starts.
And by the way, we should point out we are not contractually obligated.
We're not actually. I just really fucking enjoy the games.
Next game to talk about is called Skelextric, developed and published by Sabek Limited, released November 7th on Xbox One in Europe for £9.99. A North American date is not confirmed at this time. Speed through stunning 3D tracks you created and discover the magic of Skelextric. If you don't know what this is, you know those little electric race tracks that your uncle probably had in his basement as a kid?
I didn't ever visit family. I don't know what my uncles did.
Well, they're electric race tracks. You build them, you design them, you put the cars on the track, and you have a little trigger gun that you pull on the trigger. The more you pull on it, the faster your vehicle goes.
Okay, I've seen those in movies.
Yes, that is what this game is in digital form. It is basically what you would expect. There are 12 tracks, each based off of different countries, different layouts. And the goal is to race through and beat the AI opponent. And that's it. The gameplay is very simple. You just use the trigger on the controller to maintain how fast you're going and how slow you're going to take turns. This is not a game for someone who is looking for a hardcore racing game. This is as niche of a game as I can really think of right now. I can't think of too many other games that have just a very specific niche that this is for this type of player specifically. Yeah. Like, if you're into those electric cars, you're going to enjoy the game. It's not the prettiest looking game. Some of the animations are kind of, you know, meh. Some of the textures look decent enough. It's just not a looker. It's more about function over form. Is that the right way to put it?
Function over form. In this case, that would be the way to say it.
Yeah. I wish there were more tracks in the game. Only having 12 is kind of a bummer. I wish there were more. There is a track editor. Unfortunately, I haven't seen any way to share or download courses, which I think would have added tons and tons of replay to this game if you could share and trade courses online, or if they had a course database that you could just download infinite courses. I would have loved to see that added, or possibly still added, if they do any kind of update to the game to make a community hub for all the courses that people create. I think achievement fans are going to enjoy it. There's only 12 achievements in the game, and it's for beating an AI of level 2 on each of the tracks. That's it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's very so straightforward. It's easy if you can get the hang of controlling your vehicle. This isn't something where you just hold the trigger down and go, and that's it. You need to be precise with how fast you're going, how well you take the turns, because if you go too fast into a turn, you go flying off the track. And the AI in this game at level 2, there's only 3 levels. Level 2 is, I guess, normal difficulty. The AI doesn't really fuck up. I had one race where I was in first place through 4.5 of the 5 laps. I fucked up one turn and I got passed and lost.
Wow.
Yeah. I was near flawless except for one turn that I went flying off, and it was game over for me. So you need to be incredibly on point with playing this game and controlling your vehicle. That said, for the general audience, this might not be something that most people are going to be into. It is very simplistic on the surface. There is a lot of depth there with controlling the vehicle and making sure that you can handle it around the turns, and you know, the variety of courses is nice. I do wish there were a few more, but for the general audience, I have a hard time recommending this one just because it is such a niche game.
Yeah.
Overall, if you're in Europe and you want to experience something unique, because I don't think we're going to see another game like this come along, it's not like it's a super expensive game. It's £9.99 British pounds, which I think is basically the same. It would be the same if it released in America. It might be $12.99 if it comes to America. I really don't. I don't know the
That's about right. Whatever. It's like $12.50 or something.
Yeah, it's not a hugely expensive game. It is fairly easy gamer score if you could get through the tracks. So there is going to be an audience that wants this game for that alone. Carnage was already asking me if I had any other codes for the game. Obviously, Carnage has to ask that. But I guess overall, I would give a hesitant try it. It is unique. It is different. It's not going to be for everyone. But if you are in that niche, if you are in that very specific group of gamer who loves these electric racetracks and you want it in digital form, and you're okay with the limited amount of content, you'll probably enjoy the game.
Nice.
Next.
Next.
Final game to talk about is called Shadow of Loot Box, developed by Stately Snail, published by Rattleika Games, released November 2nd on Xbox and PS4, November 6th on the Switch for $7.99. Shadow of Loot Box is a first-person shooter about micropayments, loot boxes, cut content, and everything we just love in modern video games. Cole, tell us about it.
This is basically one of those sarcastic-ass meme games that you play just to laugh at. They literally take everything you hate about gaming culture and cram it all into one game. I think it's, I want to say it's 16 levels of just the shit you hate about games. and it literally is just as basic as you start the game, and you have to level up before you can buy the ability to run. Then you have to find some more experience so that you can buy the ability to jump. Then you've got to buy some more experience so that you can buy the ability to hold a weapon and interact with doors and every little thing. And that's just the first level.
Nice.
By the time you leave level one, you're finally able to like hold a pistol and open doors and basically jump over minor obstacles. From there, your goal is basically find a key and open the door to get you to the next level. Level two isn't just a simple dungeon where you're going to be jumping around looking for experience orbs. Instead, they've taken the whole quest line route for this. You go into a city and there are random crudely designed characters just vaguely standing around saying, "Oh, please deliver this letter to the house with the red roof." And then you go do that and you come back. And then there's a guy who says, "Oh, find me some mushrooms." And he wants 4 blue mushrooms and they're literally growing right beside of him. And he could have been over and got that shit himself. But no, it's a quest and you have to do it. And when you do these things, you get loot boxes.
Yay, loot boxes.
You can open the loot boxes and they'll have ammo and sometimes you get lucky and they have a weapon. Sometimes. Sometimes they have a little bit of health in them. The funny thing about the level where you're doing the quests for the little ambiguous dudes is the enemies that are outside of this little village. So when you go out to deliver these letters, you leave the walled village and there's random enemies wandering around in the fields between where you are and where you need to be. Those enemies are loot boxes with spider legs. And then you're so torn because you have to destroy these loot boxes, but all you want for the game is just more loot boxes. So you have ammo to destroy more loot boxes. And it's a very vicious cycle of hell.
But is it fun hell?
It is. That's the weird thing about it is like you're doing all these mundane tasks that you typically hate in a game. And yet some reason you just it's ticking your dopamine receptors and you just keep going. And you enjoy yourself while you're doing it. And I don't understand why. There's literally one level that in order to get the key, you have to complete 10 tasks. And these tasks are so mundanely stupid, like fire 25 shots, break 15 boxes, jump 30 times. And you're just sitting here like standing in the middle of the hallway, just jumping like a jackass. But it's very symbolic of the mundane shit that you have to do in a regular game.
But now it mocks it.
And now it's just mocking it. And you're just like, I don't know why I'm letting it do this to me, but it's funny. So let's keep going.
This reminds me of a DLC quest on Xbox Live Indie Games on the 360.
I don't think I ever played that.
It was a 2D platformer that was basically like that, where you would have to, before you could do anything, you have to purchase the ability to jump or the ability to like walk left. Just weird shit like that.
It's just the most mundane things. And then you're sitting there going, I don't know why I keep making myself do this just to progress. But in a way, you get a little existential about it because you're like, look, I can sit here and think of a shit ton of AAA games I've done this exact same shit in for no good goddamn reason.
Yeah.
Except to just get an arbitrary box to go do it some more. So I don't know. I can't like fuss about this game making me do it when I would pay $60 to do it.
True. Because it's Rattalaika Games, I gotta know, how are the achievements in this game?
It's actually pretty doable. It's not gonna be like super quick 15-minute completion like some of the other Rattalaika games we've had, but you could probably do it in about 2-2.5 hours.
Not bad.
Depending on how bad you are, because it is a first-person shooter, and there is one particular boss battle that just made me want to break shit. Because the game is, unfortunately, it's a little clunky on the movement. And for the most part, sorry about that.
Nope.
Oh, I need the inhaler.
Do it. Do it on the show.
I don't even know where it's at.
Aww.
I think I put it in the bathroom. But the cats have been knocking shit off my desk all day. It's not safe for an inhaler in here. I've been winging these reviews since like the Call of Cthulhu one, because Gabe is laying on my notebook. I can't. You haven't heard me turn the paper? It's because I can't.
Nice.
That's why I'm repeating myself so goddamn much. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I've been repeating myself a lot during my reviews too. It's because I suck at my job.
It's contagious.
Yes.
Repetition is contagious.
Dragging you down with me.
You forget where you're at, and so you just backtrack and like hope nobody notices you repeated the whole last sentence. But
well, overall, $8 on Shadow of Loot Box. What do you think of it?
$8. It is a little more expensive than the other Rattalaker games we've seen, and it is a longer completion. It is a longer gameplay, though. As long as you don't just find yourself absolutely wanting to break something when you have to go up against that janky ass dragon. otherwise, I give it a very recommended try. If you like these kind of meme-y games, if you want to just have a good laugh at yourself and have an existential crisis about why you do the shit you do in games, this is your chance. And it's cheap.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Ta-da! Are we done?
Yay! Yeah, that's it. That is, we got through all the reviews.
Fuck yeah.
That is it for this episode. I wish Chris was still here so he could give us some final words of wisdom.
I had some earlier, too, and I then forgot what they were at this point.
Nice. Well, do you have any final words to end the show?
No, because I already forgot what they were.
What would Chris say right now? Man, I'm just like, I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed, you know?
That's a very Chris thing to say.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm going to go play some Rocket League. That's what Chris would say.